Still, it's daytime.
Hi, folks, and welcome to Down and Dirty Marketing. The basic premise of this panel is you've written your book, now what? How many of you here are professional authors who have either been published or authors who are aiming to be? Show of hands. Excellent, excellent, excellent. What we hope to accomplish with this particular panel is to get you guys into a position where you're streamlining your marketing on potentially a shoestring budget, if that's the way you go, or other means that make much more sense for you. I'm going to go ahead and let my panelists do their introductions, and then we'll go right into Q&A for them. And we're going to keep it loose, fast format, and then we're going to do some Q&A from you guys and maybe a live demo because of some other stuff we're going to cover hopefully later on. But I want to just get as much to you guys as possible and just knock it out and make you guys happy, happy, happy. How's that sound? Cool.
I'm Kearney Kelly. I've got about 12 novels out in print and ebook. I've got over 50 shorter works in ebook and print. I've been doing this for about 7 years, and I know a lot about promoting yourself on a shoestring budget.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Stephanie Burke. Right now, I write for several different publishing houses, including Lucid Press, Changeling Press, Dolores Cave, Red Rose Press, Sizzler Editions, Broken Sword, and it goes on and on and on. And I've been doing this professionally for close to 13 years, and I have about 43 books published. And yeah, I have kids, so yeah, I really know about feeding. My money goes to feeding a teenage son. Therefore, I have promoting on a shoestring, yeah, that's me. The cheaper, the better.
Okay. I'm Marianne LaCroix. I've been published since 2003. I write for Alora's Cave, pretty much mainly. I'm going to be probably writing for Sizzler very soon. I am the president and founder of the Romance Writers of America chapter of in Tallahassee, Florida.
Okay. I'm Gail Z. Martin. I write the Chronicles of the Necromancer series for Solaris Books and the Fallen King Cycle for Orbit Books, and coming in 2013, the Ascendant Kingdom Saga series for Orbit Books. When I'm not writing fantasy adventure for over 25 years, my MBA and my business has been in corporate and small business marketing. I'm the author of the Thrifty Author's Guide series on book marketing. The new book is due in November about author websites. And I'm also the author of the 30-Day Guide series for Career Press. And the second book in this series on online marketing and PR also comes out in November. And I do quite a bit of my own online marketing and PR, so I sweat the small stuff.
And lastly, my name is Sasha Ilyevich. For this particular panel, I'm going to be an editor from Sizzler Editions. However, I've been writing as well as Stephanie for 12 years. I have 35 titles in a variety of romance genres, as well as more adult stuff available. I have a motivational book in the works. I host the Unnamed Romance Show on RadioDentata.com, and I do a number of other things outside the industry that deal with promotions. So, that's us. My first question, I'm just going to throw much of the panel and go from there. The changing face of the internet makes marketing more difficult by adding social media. My question is, do we use it?
Me first?
Whatever. I'm throwing it out like Stephanie does.
I would say absolutely. I think it's an integral part of marketing yourself right now is social media. Everybody uses it. Everybody's on it. Everybody's got Facebook. I think it's a great way of getting your name out and reaching your fans and letting them follow you. The problem especially with Facebook, is that it is a time whore. It really is. It will suck up all your time. You have to be very disciplined not to be on Facebook and playing the games and chatting away and doing all that stuff instead of what you're supposed to be doing, which is writing.
Yeah. And the wonderful thing about Facebook is that you can link Facebook to Twitter and these other social media networks, and that's really easy for me because I'm a techno idiot, but you can use it. Like on every Wednesday, I do a thing called the Hump Day Hump, and I write a lot of adult erotica. So on the Hump Day Hump, I will show pictures and give little witty comments and invite my readers to come in. And every once in a while, I'll do a theme. If somebody says, oh, I need ginger, so I'll find every half-naked redhead man and half-naked redneck head woman I can find. And I've noticed I've only been doing this seriously for about the past 2 months, and my, I guess you would call it, friends list has increased by about 600 or 700. I have about 600 or 700 people that join just to get in on the fun with looking at these naked people and making sarcastic comments. But then these people, when I announce, I also, on that Wednesday, I also put an excerpt of an upcoming book. And I find out that my sales have increased because people are like, oh, if you're this much fun here, then it probably translates over to your books and they will follow. And actually, they start buying up my backlog. So I love it. So I'll be doing my hump day humps for a while. And it just takes a little bit of time. But like you said, I get up at 4:30 in the morning to just organize all the pictures and the comments to go along with that.
Okay, I'm lazy when it comes to, I don't get up at 4 in the morning to do, I definitely suggest if you're going to write and you want to promote yourself, and yes, you are promoting yourself at this point, get yourself a Twitter account, and there are ways to cut corners, like TweetDeck, that kind of thing, where you can post one thing and it'll go to everything. You're going to go to Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and whatever else, or Hootsuite, either one of those software, so you don't have to spend a whole lot of time, because I just don't like spending a whole lot of time. But I will say that when you do start promoting yourself as your book, I really highly suggest that you just chit-chat with your fans and let them get to know you. Don't push the book. Don't say, go buy my book, go buy my book. Nobody will follow you.
Yeah.
Nobody will listen to you. Nobody will talk to you. What I do, I always get in a banter with him on Twitter, and it's very entertaining because it's always, well, quite frankly, sexual, because I also write erotica. So, I mean, if you can have fun, hook up with one of your fellow authors and get some banter going, the people will join in.
Well, and, you know, I think the really important thing here is if you are marketing a book, you are really, or planning to market a book, you're really trying to build a platform and create a following. Now, it used to be, and if you've heard me on a couple of other panels, you may have heard me say this before, it used to be that you wrote the book and that attracted the following and built the platform for you. But that was before social media, and that was before the publishing market went to hell in a handbasket. And publishers don't like risk. And so where they used to let you publish the book and then build the following, now they want to know that you've got 20,000 fans on Twitter and that you've got umpteen friends on Facebook. And they want to know that all those people will follow you straight to the bookstore as soon as you launch something, because that decreases their risk. So by creating these relationships with people who are going to be interested in buying your book, you are making yourself more saleable to a traditional publisher. And if you decide to self-publish, you are building your list of readers who are going to be the ones to run out to the bookstore or download you from Amazon. So it is a very intentional and strategic approach. And I do talk a lot in 30 Days to Social Media Success about how you avoid playing mafia wars and sending farm animals to people and poking everybody and getting sucked into that time warp. And it really starts with, believe it or not, having a plan for exactly what you're going to do on social media, who you're going to talk to, and what you need to say.
And you never know who's going to pop up. There have been acquisition editors from a few publishing houses and a few New York publishers' houses that are on my Facebook. And I had no idea. They joined in, I typed them in, it was great, and then I'll get a comment. I like the way your numbers are going. Send me an email.
You also don't know who's lurking out there. I mean, there are people who may be reading your Twitter feed, checking out your blog, checking out some of the other posts that you put online that may not officially friend you, but they're watching. And those people may very well be agents and editors, and these people are going to watch you until they've decided whether or not you're a good risk, at which point you may suddenly find one of those exciting emails saying, hey, I've been reading your stuff for a while, and I think it's good. Let's do something together.
That's a really good thing, too, when you get on Twitter and any of these social medias, go ahead and start searching for like the editors from the houses that you're interested in, because a lot of times they will give a lot of advice, they'll answer questions, they'll take one line queries. I have a friend who got a request for a full because she tweeted a one-liner for a book.
There's also a program out there called gist.com, G-I-S-T, and it lets you create a list of people you want to, not exactly cyberstalk, but watch. And in other words, you want to get a digest of what they post anywhere online, blog, Twitter, and Facebook, so that then you can casually drop in and say, hey, I absolutely loved what you said about XYZ, and now you are a knowledgeable person, and this sets you apart from the 50 million other people they're running into, and this begins a conversation. This might be somebody that you would absolutely die to have a conversation in real life for, and all it takes is being a knowledgeable reader of what they post so you can make an intelligent comment.
And for God's sakes, watch what you say.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Because you can ruin a career within a few seconds. I remember there was a self-published lady, and I can't remember her name, thank God, because I wouldn't tell it anyway. That's just not me. But she attacked a reviewer.
Oh,
and
I remember that.
Oh, yeah. And it blew up within 10 seconds, I mean, 15 minutes. We watched this. How she kept going up back, and I love my favorite, her favorite thing, she defended herself with, my mom and my dad love my books, my friends thought it were awesome. And I mean, bad grammar, bad everything, and instead of letting it go, she kept hammering at this reviewer. And then she made so many enemies that it ended up with people saying, even if you ever get published legitimately, I will never buy anything that you do.
Well, and you know, one of the things to really think about, The immediacy of Twitter and Facebook sometimes allows an impulse that should have had a little more time between your brain and your fingers to go immediately onto the internet.
No drunk tweeting.
Yes. And no impulsive sober tweeting, because when you go on a rant about something, whether it's political or religious or whatever it is, unless you've made a business decision to only sell books to the people who agree with you 100%, you have just now pissed off half of your reading market. And unless that is germane to what you write about, like you write about politics, okay, you can talk about politics. If you're writing about vampires and fantasy adventure, who the freak cares what you think about politics? That's not what you're here for.
Yeah.
So stay off the soapbox, and you'll have a lot more potential readers out there, because it really doesn't matter what you think.
One Remember? Of the things that's really important for social media is the human connection,
mm-hmm.
which actually, because we're kind of going on the same point over and over again, I'm going to bore us along. But like Marie had said earlier, we flirt and banter back and forth. I have some particular adult proclivities I do online that are in line with most of what I write that get me an audience. When I'm in a really, really, really foul mood, it's not so much that I go on Twitter and say everything that comes to mind anymore, but...
anymore. Did you notice that qualifier? Anymore.
That was a caveat.
But I have
he
to...
misbehave a lot.
I do, because my readers expect it, but we'll get to that in a second.
But that's part of your persona.
Exactly. Yeah. I am the bad boy of romance writing. Thank you very much. That being said, from the panel, or for the panel, what does not work in social media? Or marketing?
Getting online and blasting authors that you don't like.
Because you will end up meeting them in the next week.
Yeah.
Pushing your book. I mean, literally going, saying, go push your book. Or having somebody friending you or following you on Twitter, and you follow back, and then you send a direct message. Just so you know, this is my book. I really don't care. I will click unfriend that quickly.
Doing nothing.
You know what? I read, too.
Doing nothing but posting excerpts and buy links.
Ugh.
People get bored, and they don't want to see it anymore.
And by the same token, doing nothing.
Right.
I mean, there are a lot of people who, probably the number one question I get is, I'm on Facebook, now what? And it's people who have created a page, created a bio in LinkedIn, created a Twitter feed, and then since they can't think of anything to say for months, they do nothing. That'll kill it real fast, too.
Mm-hmm. Have a website. They're mm-hmm. free. You can go to WordPress and get one together, but you need a place that's like a hub for your activities mm-hmm. that links into everything else. You get one of those, you can put in your backlist. You can put in books that are coming soon. You can give away free excerpts and stories, hold contests. You can even do, every once in a while, they'll have a LinkedIn contest where it starts with one person's website and it leads to the next and on and on. That's great publicity. Even if the people don't buy, they follow you there. But if you have this hub set up, they have a centralized place to find you and all the information that they need about you. So that's really important, accessibility.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, remember that the internet is truly the hub of 6 degrees of separation. Now, the really cool part about that is you are only maybe 6 people away from somebody you are dying to meet. On the other hand, when you badmouth somebody, they will hear about it before you hit the send button. It's like a small town where everybody knows everybody and everybody's related to everybody. So just don't go there.
Ew.
I didn't say a small town in West Virginia.
She just pissed off half her audience and lost and gained 10 sales.
Go ahead. Next question.
I did.
Okay. Next question.
So we're all good friends up here. When it comes to social media marketing, is it really necessary? Do you have to be on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook and Foursquare and here and everywhere else?
No. You know what? You don't want to suck all your writing time and sinking it into marketing. You know, you just do the minimal. I mean, if you got the Twitter account and the Facebook and your blog, stick with it. You know, don't. You can get so sucked into the marketing that you will find you have no time whatsoever for writing, and the writing is the most important thing.
Too many people kind of respectfully disagree. Really, I think you absolutely have to market and promote yourself as much as you can without taking away too much time from writing, only because there are so many others doing the same thing you are.
You have to be.
If you don't stick out, you're not going to get noticed and your books aren't going to get bought.
You have to be in as many places as you can sustain for the long haul. It's kind of like, you know, too many people do, you know, what a lot of folks did freshman year in college, where they join 20 clubs and then they never show up to any of them. Much better, I'm seeing some nods out there. Much better to really focus your time on a few platforms where you can truly be present and add value and make connections, and then add to that as you've established a base there, than to have an incomplete profile on 15 sites that you never come back to and you never update, and we've all seen those. So start with what you can maintain and sustain, and then add to it, because you want to be as many places as possible, but you've got to make it good content or people won't come back.
Also, once you have it set up, you don't have to slavishly sit there and answer every post that you get. I give the example of Dakota Cassidy. I love Dakota. She's so funny. And she is literally the trophy wife, divorced trophy wife, who used to be a beauty queen. She writes some really funny stuff. But what she does is, when she has a following of thousands, she'll go on in the morning and she'll say, Honey Bear gets anything he wants. Discuss. And then she'll pop back in once or twice to see what her fans and her people who are following have to say. So long as you have a presence there, you don't have to be there to answer every reply. But so long as you're there, it keeps people interested, because it lets them know that the writer itself, his or herself, is actually paying attention to what you have to say. If you let that go, it's so hard to get people to come back to you once they're gone.
Pam, you in the red had a question?
Indeed, and it's in this vein, okay? Damage control. Thank you. I gotta come there. Okay, in this vein, damage control, right? So you've got your presence. You're on Facebook, Twitter, what have you. Didn't you screw up? For me, it was an online relationship that went south, and our mutual friends said, well, how long is it going to take for that to happen? Wow, that happened fast. And then they took sides, and it was terrible. And I lost all credibility. He did too. Win. But I'm a writer. Okay, I'm a professional writer. So I need damage control, and I also am looking at doing two different genres, or perhaps just completely switching genres from comedy to sci-fi or back and forth.
First of all,
thoughts?
Do not put your personal stuff out there.
Not anymore.
You can allow some certain things. I'll get on and I'll talk about how my brilliant son said something that was totally sarcastic, and the teacher called me, and then he turned out to be right, so we laughed at the teacher. Well, you know, things like that we will do. And I'll talk about how, you know, every once in a while I got me doing costuming, my bad back, things like that. Just little social stuff. I never get into anything that's too deep, because the internet is forever. Once it's there, it is there. And I don't want people prying into my personal life to that extent. It's enough. I'm giving a huge chunk of myself over to this. And that's great, but I need Stephanie time, you know, the time to sit back and veg and do what I need to do too. And I don't need a lot of people influencing on that. And there's always pseudonyms.
Well, and what I tell people is, you know, you have to make some boundaries here. And if it's something, you know, light and chit-chatty that you would talk about, you know, at a cocktail party or at a networking luncheon, you know, that's just kind of one of those light, amusing tales, that's fine. But, for example, I have teenagers. I almost never mention my kids on my blogs or my social media because I want to respect their privacy and protect them. So that's just kind of a blackout zone for me. I don't talk about that. So I try to share parts of me without getting too personal, and certainly without putting anything out there that, you know, 6 months from now I'm going to wish I hadn't said.
I totally go with the pseudonyms, because I have my Marianne life, which is this, and my writer friends, and then there's my Miriam life, which is my real name, and that's my family and my high school, you know, friends. Just separate it. You have to separate it.
I'm going to go from an editing perspective here and mention a lot of stuff happens over the internet, obviously, and yes, damage control is a necessary thing. I have said I'm sorry for that stupid crap way more times than I can count over the course of a 12-year career. I'm just a vitriolic person. For the most part, my audience, my readers forgive me. My authors understand me.
So they expect it out of you.
Yeah, well, they pretty much expect. Yeah, they do. I talk about some things that they get. But when I go off on a tangent, sometimes I think I'm having a bad day. And sometimes you just have to say, you know what, look, I'm sorry, it sucks, and then just stop the bad behavior. Yeah. And the pseudonym thing is an option because it gives you the whole fresh start. But on the other hand, it gives you the opportunity to have to do a lot more, double your work, basically, if you've already been professionally published. It's totally up to you. But honestly, I think people are really more forgiving than we give them credit for.
Now, having said that, you know, I think we can think of several celebrity examples where the bad boy just pushed it a little too far, and then, you know, there's only so much damage.
And now
you know, I was thinking of Charlie Sheen.
That's who I was thinking.
Yeah, now he's winning, right?
Chris Brown.
Yeah, where, you know, there are just some third rails you don't tackle if you want to stay in business. And personally, I think, you know, if you want to be any kind of a decent human being. But, You can't just go out there and expect people to forgive you. You've got to realize that these are real people, and they do have feelings, and they have a choice of spending their money any place they want. And if you're a total ass, they don't have to ever buy from you again.
It's like buying a used car. When you go to a dealership, the dealer who's selling you the car is not selling you the car. They're selling him their personality.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, you need the car. I'm going to get it here, I'm going to get it someplace else, but can I deal with you?
And their trustworthiness, and
yeah.
Whether or not they're condescending to you.
Exactly.
Gentleman in black needs to bring the microphone to the man in green.
Well, I was going to ask a question. I'm asking for your opinion. Being an over-organized geek, I always set a time, my writing time's everything scheduled. For example, I schedule 3 hours on Sunday because I love Hootsuite, one of my favorite programs, and WordPress. And I sit down on Sunday, and in 3 hours, I can lay out an entire week's worth of social media posts and all of my blogs. Mm-hmm. So that during the week, I can just tweet or send something really small up there, because the less time I spend on Facebook, the less the temptation to play those crappy social media games. So, about scheduling.
You know, one of my secrets is I spend one day a month and I write all of my social media basic tweets. So I write all my tweets, I write my blog posts, I write my core Facebook posts for the month. And I hand it off to my virtual assistant who uses Hootsuite or SocialOomph, and she posts them. Now, I know that no matter how busy I get, no matter how crazy it gets, no matter which kid, you know, forgets their lunch and I have to run it to them, I don't get to Thursday and go, damn, I didn't tweet this week. I've got something out there. Now, I'm always able to jump back out there and add to it. I can tweet from an event. I can jump back on and add a Facebook comment or an extra post. I can throw in an extra blog post. But if life goes through a blender, which mine usually does, I know that I'm out there, and not only that, it lets me give themes in what I talk about. So when I do my e-newsletter, I can tell people, hey, on this Facebook page I'm doing this, and on my blog I'm doing this, and on Twitter I'm talking about this, and on this fan page I'm doing this. Come on out. And it gives people a reason to come back to my page instead of saying, oh, yeah, I liked Gail's page. Well, you liked it last month. Come back out. I got some more stuff for you to like now, and here's what it is, and here's why you should. So I absolutely love scheduling.
Same
here. I'm the one that's up at 4:30 in the morning. I am not that organized, but I know I have certain things that need to be done. My kids have to be up at 6, so from 4:30 to 6, that's my beginning of my promo time. And then there's family stuff. And then I have myself set work hours. Mommy is working from this point to this point. And that means you too, Daddy. Do not bother me when I'm doing from here to here. Even if I have to stop and take care of an emergency, my writing time is set so that I also can get back to it easily. Because I have an evening writing time, too. I have to schedule in family time. Because I have two kids. And, well, three kids. I have a husband, so, you know. You have to mind all of them. So I have to make sure that everything is keeping and going, and then scheduling time for emergencies. It's important to do this. Because if you don't, I'm not as organized as Gail. I'm not even going to lie. I would never be that organized. I can't do it. I can't even barely operate my computer properly. But once you have your time scheduled and to do stuff.
Aren't you on a Mac?
Yeah, and I am on a Mac, which is the sad thing. But when you have that, it becomes habit to you. So now it's a habit to do this at this certain amount of time. It has a habit to do that. And then it just becomes like writing. It's a muscle. It becomes ingrained to you. So you always know what you need to be doing at that certain time.
And I think it's brilliant that you do what works for you. You know, what I'm telling you works for me. It works for some other people who might be programmed like me. But that doesn't mean it's going to work for you. Stephanie's got an approach that works for her. If you're programmed like Stephanie, do it like that. You know, do what works for you.
I think it's important to remember that writers, as professional writers, are not, it's not the way it used to be. We're not on pedestals anymore, where we're untouchable and unapproachable. I think with the advent of the internet and with e-publishing especially, we've become very approachable to people. So when your fans write you, they take the time to email you, email them back. Mm-hmm. Don't insult them by ignoring their emails. That's very important to promote loyalty to you as an author. So even though it's going to suck up some of your
thing?
Time, I think it's important to do that.
I want to say, I am definitely not as organized as some of these other people, and I will tweet on the go. This is like the best tool an author can.
You've all been tagged on Facebook.
I can't operate my cell phone like that. I don't know.
I love this thing. I got Hootsuite on it, and I will Facebook, and you can, I mean, I can go out and pick up my kids and take them to McDonald's and tweet. You know, that's my promo time. So, I mean, you find what works for you.
Well, and I think going back to the idea of authors being much more approachable, readers today expect you to be approachable. So, you know, the days when J.D. Salinger could just, you know, go off and vaunt to be alone, you know, like Garbo, just doesn't work anymore. You've got to be out there making the connections, giving people a reason to pick your book over the other million that were published last year. Or somebody else will. They don't just want the book. They want some segment of relationship with you.
And for God's sakes, be yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, because you spent how many years you've been alive being you. You're good at it. You had enough practice at it. Don't try to be somebody else. Because I've seen writers who put on this wonderful, mm-hmm. approachable persona when they're in public. And the minute they get overly tired or something stressful happens, they turn into they revert to their usual self. And a lot of times their usual self is this monster that you don't want to be around. And when your fans see that, it's like, oh, I love your next book. And, you know, what's going to happen to this character? Okay. You just lost a fan.
Yep.
And now you have, like you said, everybody has cell phones. You're going to be tweeting. And before you can pull yourself together to apologize and try to put on your public face again, it's all over that you're like a little bitch. So be yourself, please. And don't try to impress anybody. Impress yourself.
Be yourself, only if you're nice.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I want to go ahead. I've got a question in front. I'll take into a second, but I want to definitely second what my panelists are saying. I am what's the word?
Crazy, insane.
As Gail with the marketing thing and the time Nazi thing, I schedule routinely for both editing and writing, and you have to. If you don't, it's going to be overwhelming. You had a question down here in front.
This is a bit of a by-the-numbers question or whatever, but like, what kind of month-to-month growth do you guys see on your social media and fans, and sort of what tricks do you use to get new fans, get people more interested in your work?
Friend other authors. Seriously.
Really?
The more, yes, seriously.
Really?
I'm telling you, don't roll your eyes at me. I've been doing this almost as long as you have. You friend other authors, because it's other authors who write what you do, because their fans are going to probably reading your stuff as well, or they would like to. And that's how I've grown. I'm going to hurt him.
Yeah, I do a podcast where I interview other authors and publishing professionals. Lots of cross promotion there, and I see results from that. I do two virtual book tours every year, where I partner with about a dozen sites all over the world and have unique content on each site and promote the hell out of it all over the internet that I'm going to be there, and it jumps everybody's numbers, and I can see a definite increase. And I co-blog with five other authors. And so I do epic fantasy. J.F. Lewis, who is here, does urban fantasy. Crimson Heart does paranormal romance. We've got a real-life ghost hunter. And then I've got two folks who do paranormal mystery. And the key thing there is paranormal. If you like ghosts and vampires with whatever you read, come check out Disquieting Visions. You're going to meet me and five other people, and you're probably going to like all of our books. So it's a combination of constant presence and switching it up a little bit with things like that online tour to keep it fresh, and always collaborating with other authors and cross-marketing. That's your biggest bang for the least buck.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't just stick with authors. You get into your local, whatever you're writing, there's somebody in the local community that would help you naturally. I'm friends with the Ghost Hunters in Tallahassee, and they've come out and done workshops for us. The one guy is now on GHI. He's now on TV now. So I mean, and he will still promote me. He still talks to people about me. So I mean, don't narrow yourself to just writers. Kind of branch out a little bit. If you're writing a little bit about ghosts or something, see if there's a ghost hunting a group in your area, and see if you can't get involved in going on the hunts and everything, and you know, because some of that can filter down, because you can promote them, they will promote you.
Well, and you know, don't just stick to words because you're a writer. You've got YouTube. You can do book trailers. You can, you know, depending on your personality, you can cut funny videos. You can do readings. You can just have kind of a conversation. Throw in some video in there and add that to the mix. But look for all the ways you can be present in more than one way so that people don't get tired of just hearing you from one dimension.
Yeah. And do conventions. Yeah. Sit up on a panel. Talk to some people. Get your name out. But you're exactly right. I have to agree with all my esteemed colleagues, because meeting people and word of mouth has always been the most major powerful thing that you can do. It always will be. So if you're going to research BDSM, I'm friends with the Black Rose people and about three or four different bondage and domination groups. I'll go and I'll talk to them. I'll take notes with them. And in turn, they promote me, and they promote me to their friends, because they say, she's asking us for research. She's writing the kind of stuff that we like, we can relate to. And you blow that wide open. I do costuming. I incorporate that in some of my books. So I'll doing some masquerade and costume contest, and I get in with the costume people there, and I'll talk to them, and it's the same thing. Oh, you're incorporating this? I can help you with this. I can help you with that. And then they go tell their friends, she's really interested in what we're doing, and it explodes like that. So
yeah, join meetup groups or start your own. I do a writing meetup group and a social media meetup group, and some of the folks from my writing meetup group are here at Dragon Con, all the way from Charlotte. And I offer both live meetings and virtual content. So every month I offer an audio or a video as well, so that people can hopefully join the meetup even if they can't make it to the meetings and get to know me better. And hopefully that will mean that they'll see something they like and buy a book.
I don't know who here might write romance. There is a Yahoo group called Marketing for Romance Writers. Mm-hmm. It's free to join the Yahoo group. It's got a ton of authors on there, editors, publishers, in the romance genre, and they offer free information. Everybody shares info on this Yahoo group. You have a question about promotion, something you can do to promote yourself, some kind of inexpensive promotional tool maybe that you can make for yourself, post it on there. Someone will come up with an idea for you.
And, you know, something we haven't even talked about are Amazon author pages. If you have a book that is...
Oh, they're good.
You love them or hate them. If you have a book that is handled on Amazon, you can create an Amazon author page. And what this allows you to do is every time you add a blog post to that page, everybody who's bought your book through Amazon gets an update. You have no other way of knowing who those people are.
Just don't respond to the reviews.
Yeah, never, never respond to the reviews. Go have a drink, walk around the block, have another drink, call your best friend and invite them over for a drink so you can bitch about it.
See where we're going about this.
Yeah, never, ever, ever respond to a bad review.
I want to take this time now and switch gears a little bit on you guys and talk.
That guy right there has been waiting for over a day.
Yeah, poor guy in the green shirt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
My question revolves around, now that you've made all these interconnects with other authors and maybe you've made a mistake online, do you do damage control or do you hope that 5 minutes of your fame passes quickly and you never hear from it again?
Depends on what it is.
Yeah, it depends on how big it's blown up. Okay. If it's something local, you could probably get away with just giving it a little time and it'll blow over. If it's something like the person we were talking about before, she will never sell a book under that pen name again, ever. Someone, because even though we, as a nation, have a notoriously short memory, some of us do not, and some of us will remember, and those people usually have big mouths and will, you know, broadcast it again. Oh, don't you remember what this guy did? So if it's something really big, I would say, yeah, change your name.
And
don't just do, you know, the celebrity perp walk and think that it's over. You know, if you've really screwed up, be sincerely remorseful and apologize. Mm-hmm. Just saying, you know, I was a real ass and I'm sorry about that goes a long way for people if they believe you're being sincere.
And don't qualify it. I'm sorry, but no.
Leave that out there. Just
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No conjunction. Yeah, forget about the I'm sorry I got caught. Make it the I'm really sorry I hurt you. I screwed
up. If you think before you speak or type, that this will not happen. I've been in it since 2003.
It happens really less often because, you know, everybody screws up even in person.
Well, yeah,
you know.
But I mean, if you think about it, that old adage,
if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. It really holds for the internet.
What about defending people you're now linked with?
Am I a lawyer? Am I getting paid for what you did?
So we're not going to offer any liability issue things here, but
yeah, I mean that's there. You let somebody, you wouldn't hop into somebody else's divorce proceedings and try to help them out with that. No, you can support your friend quietly from the sidelines, or you stay out of it. Don't pull yourself in it because it mushrooms. I have the chaos bubble theory. Everybody is surrounded by a bubble of chaos, and when you beat somebody, you have two choices. You can open up your chaos and invite their chaos in, and then you get a bigger bubble of chaos. You can let that chaos bounce off of each other and like ricochet. Let it ricochet. It's just not worth it.
Just don't go there.
Yeah.
Gentlemen in third row, fourth row.
Third row, gentlemen, fourth row.
Yep, she's got it.
Okay. Many of the negative comments, do you ever respond, say, like, no, thanks for the comment, I'll take that into consideration. Do you, if anything, I guess, derogatory or negative, kind of turn it around, and just to show that you appreciate the feedback and, you know, stuff like that?
And I think one of the things to realize is, particularly with a lot of reviewers, I mean, there are some people...
It wasn't me, I swear!
...who go into reviewing just to get a chance to say negative things. But I think the majority of people are just trying to get people to read their reviews. And I know, I ran into one guy who had written, I found it a very hurtful review. Met him later in person, and not only did he not remember the review, but he meant nothing personal by it. So if I'd have responded, it would have turned into this, you know, smack fest for nothing. So, I just ignore
opinions
it.
Opinions are
buttholes.
Well,
everybody has one most out of stink. Yeah. If you attack me directly, then I will respond with kindness, even though I'm cursing you out and probably, you know, making voodoo dolls of you and poking them. I've had that happen. I had a reviewer actually tear me up and told me, what kind of woman do you think you are? So I responded, I thank you for your review. I'll remember what you've said. Hopefully you'll find something else that I've written more appealing. If not, you know, have a nice life, but thank you. And I let it go. Yeah. And then he wrote me back and publicly apologized. So sometimes people are just having a bad day. So, just tend to ignore it. Let it flyway.
But keep the voodoo doll.
Yeah. And you have to remember one key thing here. I agree. One key thing here before the next question. We're all writers. We can kill you numerous times on paper.
My T-shirt.
Sue had a question here.
Never start a war with someone who buys ink by the barrel.
Yeah. My T-shirt says, "Be careful what you say today, because you'll be in my book tonight."
Now, personally, I just started my own website. I'm trying to translate a lot of what's being said to the music industry. I do a lot of productions, and I do a lot of my own remixes. And I'm wondering to see how, for those of you who have your own websites, when you got them started up, because I just now started my own, how did you attract people to that website to, get that image out that, that social media cannot provide? That you can translate into a website, and how did you get people to attract people to that website and make that website start working for you?
You want to cover SEO now?
Sure.
Okay.
In a nutshell, SEO, search engine optimization. This means making your website really, really easy for search engines like Google to find. There are a million different really technical ways that probably somebody further down this aisle can tell you in minute detail how to game the algorithms. But in a very brief period, you want to find which words people looking for your kind of stuff use most often when they type in a query on Google, and then use those words as many times as possible in good sentence structure. If you haven't discovered Google Keyword Tool, it's free. It will tell you. There will be two words that mean exactly the same thing. One gets 6 million hits, one gets 10,000 hits. Use the word that gets 6 million hits. Make sure that all of your images and photos have tags on them, because the computer cannot read images. So if your title of your book is in a JPEG, the search engines can't read JPEG. So have a caption, a tag underneath it in words that the computer can read. There are a million different ways to game this, and if you want to go really deep on it, you need to hire a professional. But doing some of those basics, like naming your pages, using keywords, using tags, using meta tags, which are descriptions, like on your blog, did you ever see that line that says, "What are your tags and keywords?" Fill that in. It makes your blog post much more searchable. Just doing those things will help your information bubble higher in the search engine results. And we know nobody ever reads more than the front page of Google.
I have a funny question. I have a funny story about that. I posted an excerpt of one of my books. It was a pirate book. And it was something like, "Tied to the bread, spread eagle." And I can't tell you how many hits I get for that little term to come to the website, "tied to the bed, spread eagle."
I did that with
hundreds.
Now, yeah. Realize that if you write about something completely unrelated to sex and you throw that kind of phrase in, that's cheating.
And Google will penalize you for it. They will blacklist you on that website and IP address.
Not only that, but the people who came to your site expecting one thing will leave not only disappointed but pissed off.
See, I learned about that completely by accident, because I was writing a post and it was like, "Whoa, you want me to put what and where?"
Yeah.
And then it was like people dodging it from everywhere. "Where can I put?" And I'm like, "Well, go on the website. Everybody in there is putting something someplace. You'll find something that you like." And I didn't, that was the point when I realized that you can tag stuff. I was like, "Wow, okay. That's wonderful." But also I have to say is when I update my website, sometimes I throw a little contest and I'll announce it, make it easily accessible. You don't have to buy my books or anything. Search around on my website. So you have to search around on the web page itself with different pages to find stuff. And, you know, I'll put big major clues. It's not like I'm trying to, create the next millennium puzzle or anything.
Well,
just go and find it. And it draws a lot of attention, because while people are playing around, hopefully to win a free book or whatever, they will have a chance to actually watch and see what you're doing, what you have up on your site.
And don't miss the obvious. Put your website or your blog or both on your business card. Put them in the signature block on your emails. When you comment on somebody else's blog or forum post, make sure that it also has your website or your blog post. Do guest blogs on other people's blogs. And that all drives people back to your site.
And they have those little pixelated squares. What are they called?
QR codes.
Get a QR code. They're free right now. That might not be there forever and a day, but while they're free, get them. Throw those suckers everywhere. People have smartphones, and they'll
explain what they are.
A QR code is a...
It looks like this little Rorschach test. It's a little square, and you can hold your smartphone up and click on it, and it takes you directly to that web page.
It's basically a barcode. There are programs that will decode them for free. Yeah.
I've seen QR codes that are temporary tattoos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, really. I mean, that will automatically get people out of curiosity. They'll go, and it's right to your site. And someone's there, I spent the time getting here, I might as well spend a few minutes looking around.
Well, and when you do your book or your e-book, put the address for your website and your blog and your Facebook page in the back of your friggin' book so that people get to the end of your book and, oh, wow, here I can continue the conversation. Your publisher, if you have one, will not mind doing that. If you're your own publisher, are you freaking nuts for leaving it out? I mean, you want to drive traffic to your own site.
I can't tell you how many of my newer authors, my older ones know better, my newer ones, though, they don't put dedications into the stories, which is fine. They don't put their URL. They don't put a biography. How many of you used to read these, you know, these things that are called print books for the younger crowd? And the back, and the back here is Karen and Kelly's bio. And all of a sudden, you want to know more about Karen and Kelly because, it builds brand loyalty to the author. And now you know, you feel like you know Karen as a pretty cool human being, and so you want to buy this book and so forth. And you see that.
She
and
the website. Minutes.
Yeah. I do have minions.
She's got minions. I've got a couple here too, but they're not marked.
In the back of the room. Wave to my minion. Yeah, turn around.
There's a guy back there.
There's a gentleman back there who's been trying to ask a question.
So the one, use. Go ahead.
Cool. Go ahead, Matt.
No, you got the microphone.
All right. I'm not a writer, but I think this applies pretty much across the board in terms of not embarrassing yourself in front of people you look up to that might see things. If there's such a thing as, like, I guess, unsolicited advertising in a bad way, like, I'll see an actor I follow comment on, you know, the works of an author that we both really love, and I think, like, I don't know if they've ever met, but I say, oh, that, you know, how nice of them. My fear is they're both, you know, pretty famous. My fear is when I try to do the same thing, you know, I haven't heard anything back yet, but am I going to, like, get a phone call sometime that's like, dude, calm down, let my marketing team do this. I mean, is there such a thing as being, like, overzealous in that respect? Okay.
I think what you're saying, it always pays to promote yourself no matter what. Tattoo shops. My husband was getting a tattoo, and he wanted me to go along. Oh, that's a very nice tattoo. It looks like a symbol in one of my books. Here. And let it go. I don't think, unless we were talking before, you start beating people over the head with the fact that you're a publisher and you want them to go and buy your books, I don't think you can promote a little bit too much. No, you just have to be careful about how you do it, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
I'm talking about other people. This is like completely...
Following other people's books?
Yeah, like I'm a actor/musician. If I like all... like.
No, that's...
If I say, hey, go read this book series, I really love it, doing that too much such that the author calls me and is like...
Not at all.
There's an author, D. Renee Bagby.
All right.
There's an author called D. Renee Bagby. She might be here. She might have escaped. But she started D. Renee Bagby's Presents, First Chapters. So what she does is she has a bunch of authors send in the first chapters of their books. She presents them on her website. She has a special page for this, and it's picked up. It started off with me and a few other people, and now she has whole publishing houses sending stuff to her for them to present. It does not affect her sales at all. As a matter of fact, people will go, okay, who started this wonderful thing, and they'll link back to her.
So. You know, with my podcast, GhostInTheMachinePodcast.com, I have had everybody from folks like Kevin J. Anderson and L.A. Banks to self-published authors and small press authors. And, you know, I really offer up a smorgasbord of this for readers to introduce them to writers they might not have read. And, you know, what's really fun is that everybody from Kevin to somebody that you haven't yet heard of is just as excited to get invited to be on a podcast. Now, maybe not J.K. Rowling, but most people know that they need to be constantly visible because no matter how popular your stuff was yesterday, today's, you know, a whole nother day and you've got to keep being out there on the edge. Always say something nice about other people and it can't hurt.
I want to get to the gentleman in the back with his hand up, and then I've got one more question for the panel, and then we'll do Q&A if time permitting.
I just wanted to, I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask you about, you mentioned podcasts. Do any of you use YouTube? And if so, how do you use YouTube? You know, like, can you explain that a little bit? And specifically, like, what resources you use for podcasting? Like, everything from how do I record the podcast to where do I publish my podcast?
I know that I'm sure the other authors also do book trailers, and we will post those on YouTube, among other places, and link them back to our website.
And they can be a good tool to help your publishing house. I've been writing a book called Shelby the Wonder Sheep.
I don't even want to know.
Oh, funny. The owner of the house I want to direct it to, her name is Shelby. And she's like, sheep are stupid creatures. No, you will not write Shelby the Wonder Sheep. So I took my camera to a convention and a stuffed sheep, big stuffed sheep, and took thousands of pictures of other people holding the sheep. And I put together a presentation. It was my video bag. And I put it on YouTube. And at the end, you know, I had the model putting Shelby in this, like, this dramatic bodice-ripping clutch. And I had these intelligent women. She's wearing glasses. She's eating pizza. And it's just, the sheep did everything. And at the end, I was like, Shelby, please let Shelby the Wonder Sheep live. And it got about 400 hits the first day it was up. So she wrote me back and was like, damn you, yes, you can write the stupid book. Because people want the book. So it's a useful tool.
A word of advice about trailers, real quick. If you guys are going to put together book trailers, if you're going to use pictures, please don't snag them from the internet. Please license them, because it will come back and bite you in the ass. People will find them if you don't have the permission to use them. You can go to, like, iStock.com, DreamsTime.com, get them for like $1 a picture.
Get them free at some point.
Okay.
Time.
You can
and
go
music.
To PhotoMorgue and get them for free.
And music.
MusicBakery.com.
Same thing. Please license
royalty-free music. On the podcasting, I'm sorry you missed the podcasting for authors panel that was a little earlier today. We went through all that stuff in a lot more detail. See me afterwards. I can tell you more about that. But on videos, you know, I've taken a flip camera to cons and done video blogging. I've done video. Well, I do a book trailer every two books. I use Circle 7 Production to put it together for me. I've done, you know, just quick, you know, just here it's me chatting, you know, here are a couple of thoughts, a little bit about me, a little bit about the book, a little bit about some, you know, interesting question, just to get it out there. And especially the con-related videos have done very well on YouTube, because it's about the experience, not just about me and my book.
Very quick answer for you. From my perspective, I use my cell phone for video recording. It's not the greatest on there, but it's clear, and it gets the audio just well. And I can hold it and do it myself in the privacy of my own home, or I can do it at the cons or whatever, and upload that directly from my smartphone to YouTube, tag it on my cell phone, and then tag and via Twitter and Facebook and everything else we've talked about, make sure my fans know about it. And then they comment. So it is powerful. It's not like it's a complicated thing to do. Most smartphones have decent cameras on there. So hopefully, and again, see us afterwards to get further in depth of that.
And there's the camera on your laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them now have the camera. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do a video blog, and I'll post it, and it'll go everywhere to Twitter and all that. So, and people go, and they're just interested in seeing what you're like in everyday life. And you don't have to be talking about your book. You can talk about writing or whatever. Or the funny thing that happened yesterday.
Concrete stuff. Because we didn't touch on that.
All right, awesome. My last question for the panel before we do Q&A. Real pithy, guys. What does a writer on a shoestring do practically for promotion?
We've talked about Facebook. We've talked about Yahoo groups. Kind of ethereal things that you can do. But eventually, every writer is going to have concrete stuff. It's a big part of promoting yourself. And I think the trick is to know what to invest your money in, because everybody that's starting out has a budget. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to blow your budget on these big, pricey, shiny, new objects. You know, paper products, everybody's got them. And that in itself is a problem, because you're going to have thousands of people with stuff that looks just like this. Okay, so the key is to figure out something that's going to make your stuff stand out, that people are going to want to pick up at a convention, say this size, okay, when it's not going to blend in with the hundreds of thousands of other people that put their paper products down on the table. One of the things I've saw, and I don't have it here, of course, but one lady had written a book, I guess it was an army book or about Marines or something, and she had hot glued little army men to her postcards. They went like hotcakes. People can't resist stuff that they could touch and that they could take.
I've done something like that.
It's going to cost you pennies, but it's going to make your stuff stick out.
CDs?
Doing CDs. That's another thing that's really inexpensive. You could do it yourself. You can make shiny little labels on your home computer. It looks professional, and people will pick them up.
The best thing you can get a business card.
Yeah.
That's the best thing you can do. And you can go to Vistaprint, and you can get them for, like, dirt cheap. Pricing.
Yeah.
And don't mean just pay shipping. And just make it pertinent to whatever you're writing, put your information on there. If you meet an editor and you do an elevator pitch or something like that, write the name of your book on the back of the card.
And be creative. It doesn't cost a lot. I got a discount on fans that are sort of like yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I tagged those fans with my website and all the information, and I gave them away by the hundreds. And it cost, I found on the internet, paid like 30 to 40 cents a piece for them, had like 1,000. And they're useful things. Pens people forget, they don't even look at. Mm-hmm. Postcards and business cards, postcards and bookmarks sometimes just get tossed in a pile. If you're going to give something, you can find something that's useful that'll keep your name in the person's mind while they're doing it.
Well, and I think the most important giveaway you can possibly give is a free chapter or two of the book that you're writing. Because if you think about how people are used to behaving in bookstores, they want to go in, they want to handle the book, they want to read a chapter maybe and see if they like your writing. And they want to do that online too. So don't be afraid to put a couple of your short stories or a couple of chapters from your book online so that people can see it.
I think one of the things I tell people is if you're going to invest in paper products, it's probably not a good idea to do it with your book cover on it. And the reason for that is because in a couple of years you're going to have a different book out. And those first ones that you made are now obsolete.
Now,
so
I suggest
making a generic bookmark or a generic postcard that promotes you and your website. Then you can always put a sticker on it that's promoting your book.
Well, not the book.
Right. And if you print through Vistaprint, you can get your bookmarks or your cards done in lots of, say, 250. It's really easy to get rid of those, and then the next one you order can have the new book cover on it.
Exactly. That's what I've done. I've ordered these through a regular printer. I paid a little bit more, but I got like 5,000 of them. But it's just my website, so it's never going to go out of style.
Yeah.
Then I go to Vistaprint when I have a new release, and utilize their little free thing where you can get 250 postcards
and make sure,
for free.
I mean, you can
do one for my book cover.
You could do like a free blog through Blogspot, Blogger, you know.
Or WordPress.
WordPress. E-blogger. Yeah, there's lots of things you can do for free. Lots and lots of things. You
and
can do.
You're writers. You're creative. Use your creativity when it comes to thinking up promotional items.
And especially, I want to mention from both an author and an editor standpoint at this point is if you can get your publisher to pick up the tab on some of this stuff, push for it. It doesn't hurt to ask. Especially if you've got a really creative idea that's going to not just help you as an author and help your sales, which helps the house, but help your other fellow authors as well, that makes a big difference in them. They're willing to, even in this tough economy, they are willing, some of them, to chip in a few bucks for different things. It amazes me how many authors don't even think about asking because it's just not done anymore because it's new again. I want to.
Questions
from the audience? Do we have time?
We got a minute.
They got somebody right back there.
So pointing.
She's got the mic.
Okay.
So just very quickly, all the advice you've given is great and everything, but what do you do when you need to stay anonymous? At least
pen
you know,
name.
No. Not just separating your pen name, because that's one thing, but
I wear a mask.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. It's completely staying faceless because God forbid anyone ever actually sees your face and it gets back to your real life.
You can set up any type of social media with any name that you want to. It doesn't have to link back to you. You can also set up P.O. boxes and things like that, separate mailboxes for things. You don't have to use your name.
Gmail.
Just because, Yahoo account. Just because you don't want to do personal appearances doesn't mean that your products can't get to those conventions. Usually publishing houses and other authors are happy to take your stuff with them and throw it out on a table. So if you don't feel comfortable going and sitting on a panel, or you don't feel comfortable, being the persona in person, you can send your stuff, like, say, give it to me, and I'll bring it. I'll be happy to bring it and throw it out on the table when I'm going to a convention.
I'll have to ask everybody to move off after 10 minutes.
So 10 minutes of BS time with them. Okay.
So any other questions? And then come and get free stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I've actually got four books up here. First four people that want to come up and grab
them. All right.
Help yourself. And I've got CDs up here also.
Real quick, can we get a hand for our panel? Oh.
Thank every one of you for coming out, and best of success to all of you.